I think taking a wrecking ball to the East Wing has really disturbed a lot of people, and we'll never get that history back.
I am so excited today on Just the Facts. We have a fabulous person who I first met because she called to interview me about a book she was writing about presidential secretaries. And at the end of this, I really want to find out what's happening with that. But she is a journalist and an author who has written many best-selling books. I'm going to hold up two of them because these were converted into children's books. One is called, can everybody see this? The White House, Exploring the White House. And that's what we're going to talk about today. But she also did one for children called The Hill, which explores what it's like on Capitol Hill. But she also wrote The Residence, about the White House residence, which was made into a fabulous TV program, a miniseries by Shonda Rhimes. It imposes a murder mystery on top of her description of the White House. It's must-see TV. It's fabulous. And she's also written one about Elizabeth Taylor, who I actually got to meet and see her eyes in person. Amazing. Really. Amazing. Did you ever meet her? I know you were authorized.
No. Were they violet?
They were so violent. You have no idea. It was astounding. She was married to Senator Warner at the time, and it was a Washington event. So it was really out of context to meet a movie star, but she was riveting. She was totally amazing. I did not speak to her. I was just too in awe. I couldn't do it, but just watching her was amazing. You also wrote one about first women, obviously the first ladies, one about the vice presidents, which had to be totally fascinating, and about the President's Club of Five Living Presidents, which, again, these are fabulous books. Everybody go out and buy them all. But even though we could talk about all of those for this entire show, Kate is here today. As I said, we're going to talk about not The Hill, but the White House. And she is an expert on this. So I want to start with some of those questions about just the physical thing, because not everybody has seen the White House. They don't know what the importance of the East Wing is, which has now been demolished, completely ashes, gone, with no approvals, with no consultation with the commission, the Capitol Commission, or Congress, or the public, or anyone else. So talk about just the layout of the White House. In my mind, there are like three segments. The West Wing, which was a TV show done by, of course, Lawrence O'Donnell of MSNBC, and deals with where the real policy happens, where the president's office and all the staff are, the White House counsel, everybody is in the West Wing. Then there's the center part, which has on one end the Truman Balcony, which is an addition, and then the front where there's a driveway that goes up and around where you see all the press doing their White House reporting, and where I got to walk up it to go into the White House for Rosemary Woods. And it was like, oh my God, I'm standing where all the reporters stand. It was like so amazing. And then there was the East Wing to the east side of the White House. And that was where the first lady's offices were. It was a newer addition. But I want to hear about all of these things from you and where the residence is. I thought it was above the West Wing, but I just reread your book and of course it's not. It's above the main part. But yeah. You tell us. You tell me what I need to know and what all of our viewers need to know.
Well, thank you, first of all, Jill. You know, I loved your book, Watergate Girl.
Thank you.
And I really enjoy talking to you about Rosemary Woods, which is another topic altogether. But the White House, you know, we are a young country. The 250th anniversary is next year, which is a shame because there'll be no East Wing and there'll be no White House tours during that year.
Oh, gosh, you're right.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people will be coming here to Washington to see democracy in action and want to feel part of it and see our history. So that's too bad. But the East Wing was created by Theodore Roosevelt as a sort of entranceway for carriages we're talking about the turn of the 20th century, so the early 1900s. And then FDR, a distant cousin of Theodore Roosevelt's, in in 1942 added onto the East Wing and really made it what we know, what we knew today, it's sad to say, past tense, as an entranceway for public tours, for, you know, you had Martin Luther King Jr., you had members of the royal family, you had members of the press, you had dignitaries walking through the East Wing to attend Christmas parties, state dinners, mm-hmm. formal events. It's really, I mean, if you think about the state dinners, everybody would have to go through that East Wing entrance and go through Booksellers Hall, they called it. And as members of the press, we would sit there and
Why was it
photos.
Called that?
That's a very good question, and I actually don't know the answer to it, and I need to find a definitive answer.
Okay.
But we always called it Booksellers, and I would assume it's because, well, one place I looked said that that was where the White House tour guides would hand out, you know, the books about the White House before the White House Historical Association started doing that. But anyway, so, you know, Jeff Bezos and all of these huge tycoons from our time would walk through there, and now it doesn't exist anymore. FDR did build it as a kind of to cover up the president's emergency operations center, which was a bunker, you know, built
this
during,
was during World War II, right?
Yeah. And it was controversial at the time. You know, there was always a sense, anytime a president does anything different to the White House, I think people take umbrage, because it's a, you know, you feel, every American feels so attached to the house, and that's why it's such a big story. And so the residence itself, you have the residence at the center, 55,000 square feet, which is the state floor, the second floor, the third floor. The second floor and the third floor are where the family live. The state floor is, you know, you're thinking about the Red Room, the East Room,
right?
Those areas.
So the East Room is in the main center section, not in the East Wing.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. And I think a lot of Americans are familiar with the East Room because it's where you see a lot of bill signings, and it's one of the it's the largest entertainment, public entertainment space in the White House. And then you have the state dining room, which is really too small for a lot of these formal events. And I think that you've probably noticed this and talk to people about this, the fact that there was a legitimate case to be made that there should be more formal entertaining space in the White House. I think that people are just shocked by the size. So if you think of the residence as 55,000 square feet, then the West Wing is an additional, I believe it's like 30,000 square feet. Then you have the East Wing now knocked down, and then President Trump wants to add a 90,000, is adding this 90,000 square foot.
Right. So it's doubling the size is basically it. And you know, you say there's a need for more space for formal entertaining. Mm-hmm. How often are there events that would actually use 90,000 square feet? That's bigger than how many football fields? I think 3 football fields.
Yeah.
Really, how often is it going to be used, or is it mostly like an empty warehouse?
It's a great question. I have not seen events there that hold 1,000 people, which is essentially what they're talking about. And it's so interesting to me, because when people talk, President Trump, especially about the tent that they used to put on the South Lawn, you know, I'm not sure if you've covered or been to any state dinners, but those were amazing. And I wasn't a guest, I was a reporter. But I remember, you know, being brought in to see a couple of the state dinners. And these were not, I mean, these were not backyard barbecue tents. And it was, they were glamorous, you know, like wedding, you know, fabric hanging from the ceiling, and just absolutely stunning and gorgeous. So it wasn't as though people were roughing it for the past 100 years.
Right.
And
that's why I personally think it isn't a necessary addition. Certainly not. It started out at 200 million. Last I heard 250, then I heard 3. And President Erdogan of Turkey, who is a dictator, admired by our current president, just spent 650 million to build his White Palace, which is actually larger than the 90,000 square foot addition. It has like 1,100 rooms, which is totally amazing. And it started out as being a cost of less than half of what it ended up costing. So if he's talking $200 to $350, we're talking $700 million. And I don't care who pays for it. That's money that could and should be used for much better purposes. Let those people donate to charity. Sorry for interrupting, but I get very, very angry about this.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I also think there's so many ethical questions around these donations too. I mean, who's donating? We know some of the companies, these huge companies like Amazon and Google, and why are they donating? What are they getting in return?
So, you know, let's compare past renovations to this one. This, I assume, pales every other one. You know, it overshadows it, is what I meant to say. Not only in terms of cost, but in terms of size. And it's also, he did promise he wasn't going to touch the East Wing. He was just going to add on without hurting it. We now see, of course, that that's not true. So is there anything in history that looks like this?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that most closely resembles this is the Truman renovation, right? And that was 1948 to 1952, and President Truman and his family lived in Blair House across the street from the White House. But that was done out of necessity. I mean, the White House was unsafe to live in. Famous story about Harry Truman and Bess Truman's daughter, and she was practicing the piano upstairs in the residence, and they were having an event in the East Room on the state floor, and the actual part of the piano fell through the ceiling. Oh. And because when the Roosevelts were there first, you know, almost four terms, right? He was there for 12 years, and he was dealing with the Great Depression and World War II, and Eleanor Roosevelt was also very busy, didn't care about the upkeep of the White House, and so it was in a state of disrepair. And the Trumans came in and deemed it unsafe. And if you see the photos of the time, you know, it was stripped to the really to the bones, the house itself, and rebuilt almost from the ground up. And it was shocking for Americans to see, but it had to happen. And Truman, you know, said he wanted the Truman balcony, which, as you know, is a beloved part of the house now. But Congress said it would be gaudy, tacky, we don't need it, and they wouldn't pay.
So how did Congress get involved? Because if I want to use those words, gaudy, tacky, oh my God, the Oval Office is gaudy and it looks completely Russian. I did business in Russia and that's where you see all that kind of gold. But this ballroom, for which, by the way, there aren't really architectural plans that are usable, but we know from past experience that it's going to be gaudy. So why isn't Congress saying or doing anything about this?
Why doesn't Congress do much now at all, right? I think it's because everyone's, you know, the Republicans are in control and they answered to President Trump, and no one is going to voice their opinion because they know they'll be out and he will support whoever's running against them in a primary. This has, you know, wielded this outsized power in this role.
Wow.
And I think this is kind of the most visual example of how that power has come to be. And I think taking a wrecking ball to the East Wing has really disturbed a lot of people, and we'll never get that history back. And I am a little bit surprised that the National Park Service and some of these other groups, these historic preservation groups, couldn't publicize, I mean, at least get it out there a little bit more. We knew in July this was going to happen, and I don't think people should have trusted what he said, that he wouldn't do it.
Well, he controls most of those agencies, and that's why this is happening. Yeah. But, you know, I still believe in the power of people. And you mentioned the visual. I think the visual of the destruction is, for me, symbolic of the destruction of institutions. And I think it is finally getting through to the emotional side of people, that our institutions are being torn down, that when he talks about, I'm going to serve a third term, he isn't kidding. But let's go back to that visual to close out, and just in the East Wing that is no longer, and we don't know whether any of the furniture or artifacts in those rooms has been preserved or whether he just bulldozed without moving anything. I assume someday we'll know that. But what exactly? So you walk through a colonnade to get from the main center section of the White House to the east. And then what would you find inside of that structure, which matched, as I can tell? I mean, it looks like, anybody see my Jill's pin today is a White House, and you can see how symmetrical it is. But what was in that East Wing? Not the East Room. What else was there, though?
Well, that East Wing colonnade was actually created by Thomas Jefferson when he was president, to have symmetry between the West Wing colonnade and the East Wing colonnade.
Oh, so okay. I didn't know that.
So that was really the first, because it was all about symmetry. I mean, this is a neoclassical design. This was a restrained presidential house, by the way. George Washington, on the heels of the revolution, you know, he did not want a palace. And Pierre Charles L'Enfant, the French architect, came to him with plans for a presidential palace. And he and Thomas Jefferson, who was Secretary of State at the time, said, no, we rejected that plan, and then had this contest for the White House that is five times smaller than what L'Enfant, who had created really the Washington, D.C. as we know it today, wanted, because they didn't want it to be a palace. So the East Wing, you know, it wasn't, you know, you'd walk in, there was a big open room and a gallery and beautiful portraits of first ladies lining the walls, and then windows lining one side of it. And it was really just this gracious, large hallway that would bring you into the White House for formal events. And you would leave the East Wing and you would be welcomed in a very seamless way into the ground, the state floor of the White House, where you then, you know, are ushered up to the East Room, the state dining room. I'm thinking of Christmas parties. Right. It was just beautifully restrained. I think that was something, you know, it also led, actually, when you would come out of the East Colonnade, you're going down the hallway, and it's interesting. It's the ground floor of the White House, which is essentially the basement, the China Room, the Vermeer Room, you know, all the map room, which is called the map room. FDR would put those maps up during World War II. And I've been told that that's where the First Lady's aides now work, is in the China Room, in the Vermeer Room, which is very strange to me. I mean, this is the question, is where are the East Wing aides? Where are the First Lady's offices going to be, and where is her staff going to be? And if it's the Eisenhower Executive Office Building, that takes her further away from the power center, which, as you said, is the Oval Office in the West Wing. So it brings up these, it was a ceremonial space that we've lost, but it was also an actual physical office.
Right.
And it was also where the social secretary's office was, where the calligrapher's office was. Yes, it was the soft power, not the nerve center of the White House. I understand that, but it was still a powerful place. And, you know, Rosalynn Carter.
It's where they wrote to people. It's where we communicate. It's where tourists came in. So it meant a lot. And it is historic. It is important. Let's wrap up with just talking about what would you like to see in a addition that will replace the East Wing. It won't actually replace it, but that will be where the East Wing used to be.
It's a really smart question, and it's something I think everyone is thinking about, and I think it has no relevance to what will happen, which is, you know, it's just going to be this giant ballroom and no one is going to be able to stop it. Yeah. And I would like to see the East Wing offices rebuilt. I would like to see what was destroyed brought back. It's interesting because, you know, I was talking to someone who worked for Jill Biden, and she said, it's going to be impossible to undo this. It will take an hour to get rid of those gaudy gold medallions and to up, you know, and uproot the cement from the rose garden. But this will be impossible to undo. And but I'd like to see it restored. I'd like to see this never having happened. Yeah. You know?
Well, and you mentioned the rose garden, which of course is now a bricked over patio. But again, that's easy to pick up and, you know, replant in the image of, I would say, Jacqueline Kennedy, who started the Rose Garden. And it was beautiful and it was a beloved place. And Rosemary Wood's office overlooked that area. So we want to see some of that come back just because it is part of the beauty of what was the White House, of a time when ethics and history mattered. And facts mattered. So let's all deal with what are the facts on the ground. And I will be talking to Susan Scheer, who worked for the Obamas in the White House, about her emotional reaction and about the laws that may have been violated in this destruction. So I look forward to that. And Kate, I can't thank you enough for joining me today and for giving me the inspiration that you have. Thank you very much. I hope we will stay in touch.
Thank you. I've loved talking to you too. So thank you.
Thanks.